Artificial intelligence is deployed in a variety of ways in contact centers. But can AI improve hearing between customer and agent? Jacoby Anstruther, founder and CEO of Iris Technologies, originally sought to improve F1 driver performance by inducing flow state through sound. This quickly shifted gears to more low-hanging fruit, improving communication between driver and pit crew during races. As the pandemic began and the team migrated to remote work, Jacoby realized the technology he was working on solved problems for all kinds of people now working from home, including contact center agents. This week on Next in Queue, we touch on how sound works in your brain, how AI can change the way we experience sound, the impact of sound on flow state and focus, the challenges affecting sound in real time, and the impacts of poor audio on contact center retention. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy2Vision. Eliminate blind spots and see right through every conversation with Happy2Vision. Learn more at happitu.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Thanks for joining another episode of Next in Queue. I'm your host, Rob Dwyer. And joining me today, Jacoby Anstruther, the founder and CEO of Iris Technologies. Welcome, Jacoby. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
We talk a lot about AI in the CX space, in the contact center space. It's definitely a buzzword. It's gaining a lot of traction and a lot of different uses in contact centers in particular. But you're approaching using AI in a very different way. So we're going to talk more about that and kind of what you're doing with Iris. But your background is not that of the typical tech CEO, is it?
I've been a CEO. I was CEO of my first business at the age of 17. I set up my first company. And I've set up a number of businesses, but this is my first tech SaaS business. I've had a background in finance and private equity, and I've been around the houses a little bit, as we say in England. This is my first tech SaaS business. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And so, tell me about kind of how, the idea for Iris came about.
I always loved the model of a SaaS business, but that was sort of really a second thought. The real idea came from a thesis I developed in 2017 that we were going to transport as our primary source of information from visual to audio. I didn't expect it to happen quite as quickly as it has because of numerous macro events, but I did believe that really quite a simple thesis was just about how we multitask and how we can multitask when we listen, and therefore it was a more efficient way to receive information as we live a faster and faster and busy life. So I started looking at technologies that could augment the digital audio experience, and that was from recorded audio like music and podcasts and audiobooks, which we hadn't really seen the boom from by then. It wasn't really till 2019 that really podcasts became, you know, Spotify spent over $1 billion on five companies, I think it was. And then 2020, COVID and remote working, and it really has sort of accelerated this idea towards us, which is great. But we started developing various algorithms that would augment all of those experiences. Not just looking at the information itself, but also looking at the human engagement of that information, physiologically, neurologically, but also around focus, emotional response, information retention, and memory. So we've developed a number of interesting algorithms in that space, and it was while working on a particular project with the Red Bull Formula One team, looking at flow state and increasing drivers' performance through sensory input stimuli and driver training, But we were having a conversation with Christian Horner, and just really talking about how in this hotbed of innovation that is Formula One, why it made no sense at all that they would communicate with drivers with a pit board going past at 200 kilometers an hour. And it was due to the lack of confidence in radio comms. And that was for two fundamental reasons. One, they broke in the car, not a problem we could solve or wanted to solve. But the majority of it was from just the background noise and these extreme environments that we have in Formula One. So we took a lot of our patterns and our understanding of audio and how it is delivered and received, and started developing a AI machine learning algorithm that could identify human voice and what was noise as a racetrack and in the garage, and separate the two, leaving you just with the content you need in real time, bidirectionally, which is the real challenge. We launched that in 2020 with Red Bull, and then obviously we went into lockdown in March, about 3 weeks later. And actually, I was having a call with my team all over the country and the world, and asking people to go on mute and all the frustrations that we've experienced from that remote working. And it was clear that we just built technology for this. It needed a lot more training and a lot more development for the various implementations. But we've done hundreds of thousands of research on every sound, from helicopters to babble in a call center to cafes, street noises, kids screaming, dogs barking, all of it. And train the model to be highly efficient at removing noise while maintaining intelligible voice, but also to do it for a low CPU usage and in real time, which is where the challenges are.
That is really fascinating that you start with a very specific industry with a very specific problem because of the amount of background noise, obviously, that those cars are creating on those tracks. And within a few weeks, all of a sudden, we're all communicating in very different ways with each other. And that had some different kind of applicability. So,
yeah, I mean, when he started the business, I did not think we would be predominantly focused on communication. It was more about information retention, memory, engagement. And we have a suite of algorithms that are solving these problems there. But this just seemed like an area that has never been more relevant and more of a stress. And the call and contact center and the CX space is one that it really is interesting for. I mean, when you're dealing with these large quantities of scale of calls where, you know, it is such a data-driven industry, and you can make those major changes in terms of waste of time, average length of call, repetition, focus, engagement, all of that stuff becomes really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you talk to us a little bit more about just hearing? Because it's not as simple as just, you know, sound goes in our ear and that's what we hear and that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess music's a really good place to just explain it, and the simplest place. So unlike our other senses, our experience of audio really differs quite dramatically from person to person. And that's for three fundamental reasons. And the best example is if we were to go to a concert and listen to a band tomorrow, you know, accepting the fact that everybody there is having a different experience, what are the reasons for that? The first is your position of phase. So your position in relation to your environment and your distance from whatever you're listening to. And therefore the information you're receiving, not only coming directly from the player or the instrument to your ears, but also bouncing off all the surrounding surfaces or being absorbed by them, means the information you're receiving is different quite dramatically from person to person, or position to position, position of phase. So that's the first reason. The second reason is then how the brain takes those 20 to 30,000 pieces of phase information at any given moment in time, pieces it together to give you an understanding of your environment and of what you're listening to. So the brain is very active in the listening process. Listening to music is one of the few things we do in our day-to-day life where we use the entirety of our brain. And we've done a lot of studies on EEG and fMRI scanners to show how you and I listening to the same song, our brains will react very differently. Different parts of the brain will light up. So that's the second reason, is how we process that information difference from person to person. And then the third is the subjective element, is why you might love something that I dislike, something might motivate you that puts me to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And sound has this sort of profound effect on us. And I guess that was a big part of why I started this business, was I really wanted to study how or why sound is at the center of every culture and every tribe. It makes us laugh, cry, sleep, motivate, etc. But nobody was really looking at what was happening neurologically and physiologically. So understanding that and how we listen, then if you go into a studio with an artist, the artist is recording from a single point microphone into a mixing board. There's only one position of phase, really. And therefore, it's a very flat and lifeless sound. So then the engineer comes on and they add panning and reverb and echo and all these other wonderful parlor tricks to make it sound more three-dimensional. And then you've got your formatting company that does its own frequency manipulation. And then finally, the EQ driver in your headset that you're wearing there or the speaker system does additional frequency manipulation, trying to mimic this Harman curve, which is the best way over a large scale of people to listen to music. We all differ dramatically because our instruments are different. But to hit the most with the best sound is what people have decided is the Harman curve. What we study is in all those levels of engineering, what we were doing is we were now listening to an artificial soundscape that was plonked on top of your head saying, listen like this, put the hi-hat there and the drum there or whatever it may be. And the brain wasn't doing the work it was doing in the real life. So we call it passive listening. What our original algorithm was doing and the core of the many different products that we've developed in this business and what you've experienced in our headsets and other things is giving you the information or taking this input of information and presenting it to the brain as if you were in almost infinite phase. So you're now sitting in every seat in that arena simultaneously or getting the information as if you were. And it's in that increase of information that we see some really interesting neurological responses around engagement, emotional response, memory, flow state, which is what we were looking at with the Red Bull Formula One team and the drivers in their simulated driving off track. And the many other results that we got from our studies with both Mount Sinai Hospital here in New York and Goldsmiths Neuroscience Division in London.
That is fascinating. It sounds to me like there was also a lot of work in focusing on music, but obviously 2020. Really changed a lot of things for a lot of people and a lot of businesses. And so tell me about what your thought process was with Iris Clarity and what were some of the challenges that you had to take on when you realized, hey, maybe we need to look at this technology in a different type of application.
Yeah, I mean, I think before you can even think about the engagement of the individual, you have to think about the quality of the content. And if the content is highly disrupted or this conversation is highly disruptive, our focus and our attention to each other and to what we're speaking about or what we're listening to or whatever it may be completely goes. And I think we all saw that during the COVID period, you know, huge frustration around the lack of productivity when you're in the middle of a flow, in the middle of a conversation, and suddenly someone's kid starts screaming, and you have to ask them to go on mute, or they go out the room because the doorbell rings or what have you. And you've just lost that. And those moments of flow are very important. I think, you know, the two things that I noticed within my company that we lost the most during COVID was that, but also those small moments that happen when you're not on a Zoom call, you know, that happen around the office, the interactions, the thinking about how we can progress as a business, what we can do as the next step without having to organize a solely focused call. But that problem we couldn't solve, but we could solve the level of focus on these calls. And a problem we were solving for Formula One and now solve for NASCAR and a few many other businesses is really a problem that can now be applied to or needed to be applied to all of our lives in this new hybrid working experience. And none of that is more important than an industry that is solely focused on communicating with individuals and selling predominantly or gaining whatever you're trying to do in a call center where it is 24/7. That is the sole focus, is to have someone focused on the call to whatever you're trying to achieve. And if that can't happen for two reasons, one is, you know, the call center operative themselves surrounded by babble or working from home in their shed working or whatever it may be, the lack of focus there and the disruption of people are generally on a call center call they're on it and they don't want to be on it. So if the quality of that call is terrible, A, they can't hear the operative, or the operative can't hear them, that only escalates the stress levels. And actually, one of the studies that we're designing at the moment, which is quite interesting, is looking at the churn of call centers. It costs the average call center about £6,000 in my language to train an operative. And there's a churn of 34 to 38%. That's expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of that is because of how we're all guilty of speaking to operatives on the phone. It's not a very pleasant place to be. And if that gets even more unpleasant because I'm asking you to repeat yourself, or you're asking me to repeat myself, then you're just compounding the problem. So if we can clean up all of that, remove repetition, focus the conversation, reduce the length of time so you can get onto the next call. Again, it's all a matter of quantities of scale. So I think there's a very interesting place for this technology to play there, and we're seeing a lot of traction from the market as a consequence.
Yeah. So let me play devil's advocate. Why don't I just invest in some good noise canceling headsets for
my good agents? Question. But they don't solve the problem. I mean, if you think about the problem, there's four problems. There's the problem of the noise around me for me. There's the problem of the noise around you for you. And then there's the problem of the noise around me for you and you for me. There are four problems that need to be solved here. The most important, as far as I'm concerned, is not me having to put up with noise as a call center operative. It's making sure that my client can hear me clearly and I can hear my client clearly. So what a set of headphones like your Bose, I think you're wearing Bose now. What they do is they have microphones placed on the outside of the ears, and they pick up the ambient noise and they play that noise back to you out of phase. So you're not actually getting less noise, you're getting more noise, more information into your brain. And that's just solving the problem for you. What we do is we intercept the bidirectional communication channel. So the sound coming from you to me and me to you. And we use artificial intelligence to identify what is the human voice's closest proximity to the microphone intended for the speech, and what is everything else. We train these AIs on hundreds of thousands of hours of not only the human speech, what you want, the good stuff, but also the bad stuff, helicopters, dogs barking, et cetera, as I mentioned. And we teach the AI to identify one from the other, remove one, and just give you the content that you need. And that's the first challenge, is getting the AI to do that without removing so much information that you lose the intelligible aspect of the voice. Because we can remove noise, but actually you'll find it's easier to understand clear voice with noise around it than no noise and a fragmented voice. Mm-hmm. It's easier for the brain to understand. So the quality of the voice cannot go down, but the removal of noise is a benefit. So that's the first problem, is being able to do that at a high level. And there's something called the PESC scale that measures that, and we score incredibly highly on that, leading the market by almost 3x in terms of that score. The next problem is CPU and the processing power of whatever machine you might be using to conduct that call. Complex AI algorithms use huge amounts of processing power, especially if they need to work in real time, which is what this needs to do. It needs to work in under 30 milliseconds to be accepted by the telco industry as zero latency. Anything below 100 milliseconds, the brain doesn't really notice latency, but it will pick up a tonal shift. Anything below 30 milliseconds, it's definitely zero. So you have to do that in less than that. We do it in about 23 milliseconds, because you have to store the memory of the conversation, and there's a lot of process that's happening behind. So that's to do that on low CPU is the next real challenge. I mean, to put that again into perspective, a new MacBook Pro will probably have 6 to 8 CPU cores on it. We know one of our competitors uses 120%. That's a lot of processing power. Your computers are meant to be doing many other things, and these are quite complex modern new computers. And we're at 3.1%, so very low processing power. And that's all to do with some of the patents that we hold, some of the things that we do under the hood, and how we can be so efficient about it.
So is this technology something that I need to install? Is it a browser plugin? I mean, how does that work if I'm the user? And let's say I've got some different applications that maybe I'm using it with, right? Maybe I'm using it with a video conferencing like a Teams, but maybe I'm also a call center agent, and so I'm using an ACD platform to receive calls. Maybe that's VoIP, maybe that's WebRTC, whatever the case may be. How does all of that work?
Yeah, it's a good question, because again, you've identified one of the biggest challenges we had, and the call center operative is the perfect example of that. If you can imagine, not only is it the VoIP system or whatever they're using, but also there's a CRM system layered on top of that, and the various different connotations of all those different systems and permutations of it that you could be using as a company all throw up new challenges. And we put a huge amount of time and effort into QA testing many hundreds or thousands of different connotations of, you know, CRMs alongside VoIP platforms, etc., to make sure that we've proven out that there isn't a problem. And there will always be edge cases that we haven't tested that I'm sure will throw out problems. I mean, some of these CRM systems have the ability to choose a driver, because we run a virtual driver within your system. Some of them don't, so we have to take control of that automatically. So there's all of these different challenges that were thrown up, but we needed to work through each one individually. So the way you can use it is either we can sit quietly in the background and it's just doing its job, or you have a desktop application that can drop down and you can flip the microphone or speaker off. You can also have the ability to toggle in the sound as much or as little as you want. The importance for the toggle system for the microphone, more importantly, was really, If I had three other people sitting next to me here now trying to get involved in this conversation, my proximity to the microphone on the speaker would mean these guys would disappear unless I was to turn it off. So we are also developing a conferencing mode, which will also remove that. And then there's a number of other things that we do under the hood. We gain equalize. So if I was to move my head away from the microphone, it would keep my voice at the same level at all times. If the speaker was to move, et cetera, et cetera. And then we remove echo from the room. So there's another slightly different problem that you can get from a very hollow glass box office room or whatever it may be, which isn't noise, but is removing echo. So we solve a number of different challenges under the hood alongside the sort of algorithm that is doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating technology to me. I mean, I know, having listened to, I don't know, thousands of phone calls, right? I have heard just about everything that you don't want to hear on a phone call, whether that's, you know, a lawn being mowed or dogs barking or right. Somebody's kids walk into the room. And I can also, so you talking about echo, I know one of the things, particularly, I think a lot of people are thinking, well, this is really great for work for home because it can eliminate those things. But even when you're in a brick and mortar environment, particularly post-COVID, a lot of these cubicles are relatively small. And one of the things that I know that some companies did was they put up these plexiglass walls even Wow. higher to isolate people. And that really is, from an acoustic standpoint, it's not great.
Work.
So it just creates that sound bouncing around, and it's a really awful experience.
Yeah, I mean, the companies have been trying to solve this problem for some time. You know, we talked about noise cancelling headphones, doesn't actually solve the problem. Talked about plexiglass. You know, we've seen 24% growth in the last 2 years in the call center industry. That's cramming more people into the same bricks and mortar, or they're working from home. If they're working from home, that's even less of a controllable space. So it's quite an elegant solution of software that's not only very affordable, but also very easy implementation that just sits in there and doesn't just, as I say, clean up the noise for you or for the customer around you, but the other way around. And that's the importance of this bidirectional aspect, is only one person needs the technology from everybody in the call to benefit from it, which is powerful.
Yeah, so interesting. So you've talked about some of the things that you're working on, like the conferencing mode, so that you're not canceling out other voices that are maybe a little bit farther away. But what else are you working on? What else is you know, around the corner or around the bend for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of stuff that's in the pipeline. We're good, just launching a big project with we'll find out soon with Innovate UK and Imperial College around the transferring of data and how we can make that more efficient. I can't go into too much detail right now, but which we're very excited about. We're looking at a lot of sentiment analysis stuff as well. So not just sentiment analysis as you might know it in terms of understanding the words I'm using and what sentiment they have for data analytics, but also sentiment analysis from actually the tones of my voice and the state of mind that I might be in when I'm having this conversation with you, which we find is a very interesting space as well, but all around, you know, the efficiency of these communications and what you're trying to achieve. We put together an incredibly smart team of much smarter than me, of engineers and researchers who are constantly developing new ideas and new products that we're going to bring to the market soon. So it's an exciting time. We already have quite an interesting suite, and we're looking at various sectors we're trying to tackle with clarity. It's very much around call and contact center, which we've discussed at length, specialized comms. We think emergency services, aviation communications, very similar to what we do in Formula One and NASCAR, so easily replicable in those environments, and where it is a matter of life or death, and where you know the importance of clarity to the communication is so high, and then the final piece, which is actually coming to market in the next weeks, is our post-processing tool. So this is for the data analytics and AI space, and looking at voice to text and analysts. And you know, this is a boom market at the moment as we have moved so much more onto audio and how we can analyze and get the efficiencies out of these communications. So we're providing a product that clients can sit there. I mean, generally speaking, the simplest way to explain this is really voice to text. You know, we're seeing about across the market, the most performant technologies are doing about a 60% accuracy. We can improve that on the average call to about 80-85% by cleaning up the communication. And then if the noise is, you know, more profound, then those percentages, you know, improve more and more. So I think that's going to be a very interesting space for us as well.
Yeah, very interesting. Let's switch gears a little bit. You are a big fan of music, yeah?
I am, yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite album of all time?
I get asked that a lot. I think my favorite album of all time is Paul Simon, Graceland.
That's a really good choice.
Which is an odd choice for me because I had a history and a previous life as an electronic music producer and DJ and owned a record label in that space. But I think as an album created for when it was at that time, the sounds and the... I mean, it's just one of those... People don't listen to albums like we used to, you know. We don't listen to an album from start to finish that's been compiled as a journey. And that's, I think, a really good example of where I can put on track one and listen all the way through, and I love it from start to finish. It's an album as a whole rather than lots of individual songs put in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What's the favorite thing that you're listening to right now that maybe is a little newer? You got any recommendations out there?
I'm a big fan of producers like Satori. Do you know Satori?
I'm not familiar.
He's sort of a bit more in my genre where I come from. I think he's producing some really good stuff at the moment. I quite like that quite organic, ethereal sounds. Let me sort of disappear for a bit and switch off the mind. I mean, I listen to music all day, every day, but when I really listen to music, I will do it because I want to get lost and immersed in it for an hour or two and just switch off.
I'm going to have to check that out. I know that when I want to just be immersed, Brian Eno's Music for Airports, that's what I throw on.
Right. Nice. I like that.
It's great concentration music because I don't think about the music.
I was having a call in the airport yesterday about ASMR. Do you listen to any ASMR stuff, which is booming on YouTube at the moment?
I don't, but I'm familiar with the concept.
I mean, there's some tracks on there that have got 500 million listens, and then I haven't got into it either. But there was a company pitching me the other day about it, and I think I've got to spend some time and understand it a bit better, or what the appeal is. I mean, I think as we live in a, you know, we talked about it earlier, this about the faster life we live, the fast and the speed of life we live in, as we do that more and more, I think we need more and more things to help us disconnect and deal with the stress and anxiety that comes from being permanently stimulated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. If someone wanted to learn more about Iris Clarity or the work that the other work that you're doing with Iris, what's the best way for them to
look into that? Is iris.audio. You know, there's various links to the various different technologies, the headphones, Clarity, the other businesses that we're developing. That's constantly evolving and being updated as we write a number of white papers and interesting pieces on our research and on the understanding. So I think that's probably the best place to go.
Perfect. All right. Well,
appreciate it. Thank you for today.
No, thank you, Jacoby. It's been great. And I look forward to seeing what you guys are able to accomplish in the future.
Excellent.
Next in Q is brought to you by Happy Two and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoyed this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you feel that it's worth it, rate the podcast as well. But more importantly, if you enjoyed this podcast, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. Thank you for listening.